Uber is set to make London its first all-electric city, the ride-hailing app aiming to make the switch by 2025. It would be the first place where Uber has completely ditched regular cars. Some of the city's iconic black cabs already going electric. London also has plans to raise charges for polluting vehicles.
Chinese President Xi Jinping made a rare public appearance on Tuesday to open one of his country's biggest projects, one of the longest bridges in the world at a cost of $120 billion. It will link Hong Kong and Macau to southern China, the economic engine that powered Beijing's rise. And it's part of Xi's vision for China to lead the world in technological innovation.
They're not the fastest at stacking shelves, but they're still seen by their fans as a quick fix for Japan's acute labour shortage. This is the World Robot Summit in Tokyo, where 90 domestic and overseas companies are showing off their technology, and where there are big ambitions about how far that technology can go. And this, for the developers, is the challenge. A rapidly ageing population, where those between 15 and 64 years of age will drop from 76 million last year to only 45 million in 2065.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's October the 24th, 5:11 in the morning. Thanks for being here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business day getting underway. Lots on the program today. First, we'll begin with the new report on obesity rates among young people across the country, a report just being issued today. We'll have Jamie Brussel from Robert Wood Johnson Foundation with us to talk a little bit more about the data and the research. A little bit later in the program, Domati Pongo will be here from the WGN Newsroom. All this week we're examining lead in the water. It's a news series that began yesterday. Domati will be here today to talk about some of the interviews that he's been doing, some of the developments after the Flint water crisis. That'll be about 5:40 this morning. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk with futures pointing toward opening losses again today on Wall Street. Dow futures are off more than a half a percent, down nearly 148 points at 25,098. The Dow yesterday suffered a 125-point loss. The NASDAQ S&P 500 also saw losses yesterday. This morning, the S&P and NASDAQ are off more than a half a percent each, the NASDAQ approaching three quarters. Around the globe, markets in Europe are generally higher, with the FTSE up more than a half a percent. The DAX is up three quarters, and the CAC in France is up a little bit more than a half a percent as well. And markets in Asia are generally mixed, with the Nikkei in Japan up about a third. Markets in China are a little bit higher by about a third. The Hang Seng lower by about a third, though. And oil this morning is trading at $66.45 a barrel, which is up about 2 cents. A couple of stories before we begin this morning. President Trump says Fed Chairman Jerome Powell is endangering the U.S. economy. Trump making more remarks about the Fed chief yesterday. The Fed has raised interest rates this year three times this year, is expected to hike one more time before the year ends. The president says he's unhappy with the Fed because President Obama had zero interest rates, the 0% interest rate hikes, I should say. The Fed cut rates during the Obama administration, though, because the economy was recovering from a global crash in 2008. The Fed is now raising rates because of inflation concerns, and it would not have the tools to respond to another downturn if markets were at zero. The news today from Yahoo is that they're paying $50 million as part of a settlement over a data breach from 2013. The company will also offer 200 million Americans and Israelis credit protection and monitoring for up to 2 years. Terms of the settlement reached late last night, submitted to a court. Anyone who had a Yahoo email account between 2012 and 2016 is eligible to file a claim. And McDonald's is planning to introduce some new menu options. The burger chain says new breakfast items and a meal deal are in the works. McDonald's has not described the items specifically, but it says the deal will offer core food items at an affordable price. The additions are the latest in a brand strategy that includes innovations like delivery options and self-ordering kiosks at restaurant locations. front and center this morning. A new report detailing the rates of obesity among young people out this morning, posted by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Jamie Russell is with us today, senior program officer at Robert Wood Johnson, and we appreciate you being with us this morning. Jamie, good morning.
Good morning.
Well, let's begin with some of the reasons why we're doing this study. This looked at all of the states, and obesity rates among young people, how old?
So this looked at obesity rates among youth ages 10 to 17.
And what is the headline from the data?
Yeah, so the headline is that these new data show that nearly one in six young people in the U.S. has obesity, and that really puts them at greater risk for conditions like heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure. And that we're still seeing troubling racial and ethnic disparities in obesity rates, and we can go into the specifics in your home state in Illinois.
Yeah, I would like to do that. I want to talk more about the importance of making sure we have these numbers in hand. Because, as you mentioned, the problems will just start compounding exponentially going forward. The data will be able to be used. How and why is this so important?
Yeah, so the data is critically important. I think equipped with knowledge, we can make change, and there's certainly a lot that could be done to address this epidemic that really plagues the nation. In fact, your state in Illinois has the 17th highest rate among all states, so putting youth 10 to 17 at 16.2% are considered obese. The national rate is 15.8%. And again, the troubling statistics in terms of the disparities are clear, like they are in Illinois and like they are nationwide.
This report shows that 9 of the 10 states with the highest rates are in the South. 9 of the 10 states with the lowest rates are in the West or Northeast. What does that tell you?
I mean, there's clearly geographic disparities. We know that particularly those southern states continue to be hardest hit, and there are, you know, many factors that are contributing to that. I also, you know, do want to mention, though, that there's a huge amount that could be done, and it's absolutely possible to make meaningful progress on childhood obesity, no matter where you are in the nation, and really help all kids grow up at a healthy weight. And there are many policy recommendations and strategies that communities, states are deploying across the nation to address this.
You mentioned the Illinois rate, 16.2%, almost 10 points higher than that is Mississippi at 26.1%. Talk to us more about the disparities here, the discrepancies between these geographical regions and also racial and other demographic reasons.
Yeah, so I think, you know, absolutely we have to, you know, elevate the fact that we continue and we've continued to see this really troubling racial and ethnic disparities in obesity rates across the nation, nationally and across the states. And we need to be paying significant attention to decreasing those gaps because, you know, if we don't do that and we decrease prevalence rates but do nothing to address the deep disparities, we will not have, you know, actually done our job here. So we really need to be paying attention to those kids that are most overburdened by this epidemic. And we know that, you know, these are kids living in lower income communities from lower income families and deep racial and ethnic disparities. So it's something that we're deeply committed to at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and something I think critically important if we want to really ensure that all kids and families can thrive in this country.
New data today about obesity across the country. Science is predicting that more than half of today's children will be obese by age 35 if these current trends continue. Jamie, I want to talk about some of the recommendations that accompany the data out today. The important part of this for Congress and the Trump administration to make sure that low-income children and families are still getting these nutrition programs.
Yeah. So a few things I'll say about that. You know, we are urging policymakers at all levels of government to prioritize obesity prevention and help all our kids live a healthier future. And we can do that by ensuring schools and childcare centers offer plenty of nutritious, healthy foods, time to be physically active. And we should absolutely ensure that federal programs that we know are critical supports for families like SNAP and like WIC are accessible to the families who need them and provide access to healthy foods and beverages. So those are critically important elements.
Is there some concern there about rolling back some of these standards, especially for school lunches?
Absolutely. I think that's always a concern. And I think policymakers have a real role to play in ensuring that the progress that has been made and that we've built over the last, you know, many years are maintained and we go forward, not backwards. So critically important, absolutely a concern. And again, I think that we all have a role to play here, you know, as individuals, as parents, as policymakers, as leaders, as teachers, as, you know, community members. And so we can all be talking to our leaders about the changes that we want to see in our communities. And policymakers, to your point, can protect the progress that we've made and hopefully advance and continue to advance new innovative ideas in this space.
And there's some other common sense ideas as well. I know some states have been rolling back physical education or recess at schools. 60 minutes is probably the key or the sweet spot here, isn't it?
Yeah. So I think, you know, that's a really important issue to ensure that, you know, parents are talking to their schools about not only, you know, what's being served in the cafeteria, but how much time their kids have for physical activity and recess. And there's a host of best practices there that, you know, can be deployed in easy ways in school. So that's, you know, clearly part of, you know, the sort of calories in, calories out piece. We have to ensure that kids have access both to opportunities for safe physical activity during the day, in school, out of school, and in addition, access to, you know, high quality, healthy, affordable food. And schools can implement policies around that to do both.
I know we've seen some states have beverage taxes and some have removed sugary drinks completely from schools. And but that should that be expanded to restaurants? And should restaurants not market some of these meals to kids?
Yeah. So I think restaurants, business in general, food industry have a huge role to play here. And, you know, restaurants, food and beverage companies can continue to, you know, make their products healthier and market the healthiest options to kids and families. I think that's a critically important part of this as well. So, again, just to go back to the point that we all have a role to play here, industry, restaurants, clearly. And we know that marketing of unhealthy foods to kids and families is powerful. And we need to be on top of that and really addressing, you know, those practices that are not supporting healthy choices for kids and families.
We've been talking about the health impact here, but we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the economic impact. Give us a sense of how much obesity, childhood obesity here, as we're talking about it, cost our economy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a massive cost, you know, financially, socially, economically. And again, I think that's why, you know, it's so important to be investing in the front end so that we don't, you know, down the road end up having to, you know, provide healthcare services and costs to kids that are already obese. And then, you know, their trajectories well into adulthood, maintaining that. And so the cost on the back end is, you know, billions in healthcare costs. So again, just helping all kids grow up at a healthy weight so they can lead healthy lives and ultimately save our nation billions in healthcare costs down the road.
Are you optimistic about the road ahead here? It seems like we have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, you know, we have a lot of work to do, but I'm incredibly optimistic. I think it's absolutely possible to make meaningful progress on childhood obesity and help all kids in this country grow up at a healthy weight. We've seen huge signs of progress, and I'll just, you know, plug stateofobesity.org, which is our centralized web portal for all things related to bright spots, policy recommendations, and policymakers and the public can go on that site and, you know, really not reinvent the wheel, but look at what's working. We all know more than ever about what strategies work to help kids eat better, to be more physically active, and those are really the first steps towards reversing this epidemic in our country.
Well, Jamie, we appreciate you being here with us and sharing some of this with us this morning. And thanks for getting up with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks. Thanks so much for having me.
Jamie Russell, Senior Program Officer at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Again, the website stateofobesity.org. Latest estimates are that each year the United States spends $14 billion on childhood obesity alone, between $147 billion and $210 billion on adult obesity.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke, Senior Editor at Chicago Inno, with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, presented by the 1871 Momentum Awards. The Chicago commercial jingle creator behind Gatorade's iconic Be Like Mike spot has launched his own beverage startup that wants to lower your blood pressure. The drink, 120 Life, is made from hibiscus, magnesium, and other natural ingredients that are proven to lower blood pressure. And Verano Holdings, a Chicago marijuana company, has raised $120 million in new funding to expand in Illinois and elsewhere. The funding round follows two other large cannabis deals recently in Chicago, Cresco Labs' $100 million round, and PharmaCann's $682 million acquisition. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at chicagoinno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thousands of Chicago homes have lead in their drinking water. It is just one of many communities across the country dealing with lead in the water system. Of course, we all remember Flint, Michigan, still dealing with that water crisis. We've been examining that all this week here on 720 WGN, specifically in a new series called Bridge Over Lead Water, reported by Domati Pongo. Domati is with us this morning. Domati, I mentioned these homes in Chicago that have been tested. I think 70% of the several thousand homes had dangerous lead levels. This is a serious problem that seems to be cropping up in many communities like Chicago.
Yes, it is. And thank you for having me on this morning. It's been happening in a lot of communities. And this mainly started because in the city of Chicago, Chicago was one of the last major cities to stop mandating that the lead service lines be used in its homes. So, you know, we knew about the dangers of lead in the United States in the 50s and 60s, where around that time, major cities like New York were beginning to stop using these lead service lines when they started building these new buildings. Well, in the city of Chicago, you had to be a licensed plumber in order to install lead service lines. And it wasn't until they changed the building code in 1986, when the city of Chicago stopped mandating the use of these lead service lines, 30-some-odd years after we already knew about the dangers of lead. And it goes into a long reason about why that is. Things about, you know, how powerful unions were at the time and how it was politically unpopular to stop mandating the use of lead service lines because that meant different jobs for a certain voting block. But, yeah, so Chicago was one of the last cities to make this change. Right now we're paying the price for it.
Staggering 400,000 potential lead lines in the city. It brings to mind, you know, just the enormity of trying to not only replace some of that, but kind of deal with this problem. It seems like a big deal, big problem.
It really is. I don't know if you remember last summer, there was the issue with where we were, the city of Chicago was trying to address this issue at city locations, and they had, you remember the park districts all in the city of Chicago were continually running those pipes so that they could flush the lead out, and they thought that by continuously running them, don't drink the water fountains. We're doing these stories at the Chicago Park District, none of the parks, because they're going to flush all this water out, and it didn't work because it's more complex than that. And if they had to do this at the parks, then imagine what we should do at the homes. And so what happens is the city says, listen, if homeowners are concerned about this issue, you could pay the $4,000 to $7,000 yourself to remove these lead service lines. But most homes and households don't have that money, and ergo you have 700,000 households that are potentially affected by this issue. The Chicago Department of Water Management is only required to test the lead content or lead levels every few years in only 50 homes. So they could choose which 50 homes they decide to test this out at. Well, Chicago residents started to call the city themselves. If you call 311, you can get a free lead testing kit sent to you. And I said, wait a minute, we think something might be wrong with our water. So the Chicago Tribune did an investigative report. About 2,800 homes were having these independent studies done. And if you look at it, 70% of those homes tested, of the 2,800 or so, had lead levels in their water that was present, that was beyond the level that the EPA would set that was deemed drinkable in bottled water, which is 5 parts per billion.
Yeah, Domitian, you know, the worst part of the story is we looked at Flint and see how that was dealt with, how it is still being dealt with. I know you talked to the mayor of Flint for your survey, for your series here. What did she say? Mm-hmm. What did she say about how things are progressing there, and perhaps what the lesson could be for other communities?
The main thing as far as lessons go for other communities, she said, continue to get this problem out there and take it seriously, and then to pay close attention to what city officials are doing to respond and push them on whether or not they're making the right response. So in the city of Chicago, they started to change the main service lines and not the lead service lines that connect to this other piping. And she said, you know, different things were being done in Flint where, you know, that problem could have been addressed more efficiently. And I also talked in the series to Alderman Scott Wagaspack, and he says, if we were going to change these main lines, we also should have replaced these connectors now while we have the opportunity, because experts say if you go into the plumbing of the city, you can agitate the lead service lines and actually make the problem worse. And we kind of dive into that in the series that airs live, but in the bonus content and the interviews that you'll hear when we post them online Thursday, it really goes into detail about what that process will look like. But other things she talked about is what type of communities does this happen in. You know, Flint was mostly Black, mostly poor town. And she said that played a major part in them not receiving resources. The worst lead levels are seen in the city of Chicago in mostly poor neighborhoods on the south and west sides of the city. So this has become a campaign issue for some of the, you know, the people of color who've been running for mayor in the city of Chicago. So those are some parallels I saw, the slow reaction. And also when media started to point this lead problem out in Flint, government officials tried to shy away from it, didn't really address it head on, wasn't really saying whether or not this is something we should pay attention to, or they kind of downplayed the problem and put a political spin on it. Same thing's happening here. We know what's going on, but the Chicago Department of Water Management wouldn't talk to me for this series, and we haven't heard Mayor Emanuel really say something forceful about what he plans to do for the city in terms of this lead issue.
Yeah, and the worst response could be criminal charges. I know some of the folks in Michigan were brought up on criminal charges over this, so perhaps, you know, that might get people off their behinds or no?
You would think so. I do want to reiterate, though, too, you know, they had lead levels. You know, the EPA sets the level at 5 parts per billion for tap water, for bottled water, 15 parts per billion for tap water. In Flint, they were seeing levels once the system was moved from the Detroit water system to the Flint River, upwards of 400 parts per billion. We aren't seeing levels that high in the city of Chicago. The thing to know, though, is no level of lead is safe in drinking water, no matter what, you know, parameters that the EPA sets. So it's not as bad as it was in Flint, but those trace levels can be linked to neurological diseases, behavioral issues in children. And some behavioral scientists are saying maybe that's why we see high levels of, you know, crime on the south and west sides of the city and the academic performance we see, because they're drinking this water and it really is affecting kids and their ability to learn, ability to behave, and what their cognitive, what their cognitive ability will be like when they grow older. So still a serious issue. We hope something can be done to make sure that the city starts to pay closer attention to it. But I also don't want to overly alarm you guys and believe that what we have going on here is as serious as it was in Flint.
Yeah, and I think people will remember how the country dealt with lead paint when we put our heads together on that. That went away pretty quickly, didn't it?
It really did. It really did. And right now, and one of the reasons we're raising the issue now is because it's National Lead Poisoning Prevention Week. Right now, we're focusing on water. That's the thing we're really focusing on. But you can also, you know, make sure you're careful about if you have paint chips in your homes. You know, kids pick up paint chips and put them in their mouths, and that really makes them vulnerable to it. So it's not only lead exposure through the water that's dangerous, but also through the paint. But, you know, we got that paint issue under control, and it's about time that we really paid attention to what's going on with our water.
All right. Domati, we appreciate it. Good reporting, and we'll be listening at 7 a.m., 10 a.m., 1 p.m., and 5 p.m. here at 720 WGN. And then you say Thursday is when all of the extra material will be posted online, the longer interviews.
Yes, all of those longer interviews will be online. I talked to an activist who really dives into this issue. We have Alderman Scott Wagastack, who has been trying to hold public hearing on this issue. There's also Alderman Taliaferro, whose children suffered from lead poisoning through water. You hear a bit about it in the series, but you'll hear that full interview with Alderman Scott Wagastack talking about what happened to his fellow city council member. And then, of course, you have the mayor of Flint, Karen Weaver, who I talked to, is really candid and a very interesting interview. And you guys can see what's still going on with Flint, Michigan today. And really, you know, let's make this an issue that residents pay attention to and hold elected officials accountable for.
All right, good stuff. Thanks, Domati.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it.
All right, Domati Pongo from the WGN Newsroom. Again, the series Bridge Over Lead Water, airing this morning at 7 o'clock, then at 10 a.m., 1 p.m., and 5 p.m., and, of course, extra material posted at WGNradio.com.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures on the Dow off more than 0.5% this morning, and futures on the NASDAQ and S&P pushing 0.75%. So it could be a weak opening a little bit later this morning on Wall Street. Now the latest on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Thank you, Steve. Good morning. Corn firmed slightly yesterday. Light technical buying and a lack of farmer hedging as farmers stayed busy harvesting. And at the end of the day yesterday, the corn market was up just slightly. December corn gaining 0.75 a bushel. December wheat gained the same amount, up 0.75. Soybeans ended lower, down 1.5 at 857.5 in a very quiet grain trade at the Board of Trade yesterday. Livestock futures, live cattle particularly, eased yesterday, retreating from a two-week high hit on Monday. Live cattle for the month of October up 2 cents for the day, but December live cattle down 72 cents for the day. November feeder cattle down $1.12 for the day, but February lean hogs ended up $1.37 a hundredweight. And Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue will be in Illinois today, touring Eckert's Orchard in Belleville, Illinois. And later in the day will be at the Reifstech Farm near Champaign, Illinois, working on behalf of Republican congressional office seekers. Thank you and have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for Wednesday, October the 24th. The Census Bureau releases its report on new home sales today. That'll come out at about 9 o'clock Chicago time. We'll get mortgage applications from the Mortgage Bankers Association. We'll also get the House Price Index, the EIA Petroleum Status Report due out, and the Fed Beige Book a little bit later on as well. Lots of earnings on the calendar today. Aflac, Allegiant Travel, AT&T, Chicago-based Boeing, Callaway Golf, Visa, Ford, Microsoft, SiriusXM, and Whirlpool, all reporting quarterly earnings today. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, October the 24th.